The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Good to have you along. It is Tuesday, June the 2nd, and I am Peter Christian, as the young lady just said. Of course, that's the fabulous Mr. Nick Christensen over there taking your phone calls. It is open phones, by the way, from now until 9 o'clock this morning. And then at 9 o'clock this morning, yes, indeed. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What's that? 8:30. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. At 8:30 this morning. Yes, it's going to be Global Hotspots. And we have a Dr. Michael Mayer going to be joining us here in the studio this morning. Dr. Mirdad Kia, University of Montana history professor, is going to be with us on the phone. So lots going on for Global Hotspots. And we're looking forward to getting your phone calls as well at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Good morning to Mr. Nick. How you doing over there, sir?
Good morning. Sorry, I was on the phone there. But yeah, no, we have AFP is joining us here in about 2 minutes. Oh. Their new time's going to be from 8:10 to 8:20. And then we'll do a brief open phones if we have time. And then, yeah, it'll be Global Hotspots with Mirdad Kia and Michael Mayer at 8:30.
Sounds good. All right. So if there's something on your mind, give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Yes, indeed. And it's always fun for Global Hotspots with Dr. Mirdad Kia. Of course, he's an expert in the country of Iran. Of course, University of Montana professor. And Dr. Michael Mayer, of course, is going to be here in the studio with us. So we always look forward to that. And of course, your phone calls, most welcome. But right now, it is open phones. We want to find out what you would like to discuss this morning. Our phone number is 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. What do we got there?
We'll go Nancy, I guess.
Nancy, yeah. Good morning, Nancy. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please, ma'am. What's up?
Well, morning, Glory, and of course, Montana votes today. Very important day in our lives.
Right.
And across the country, especially in California, I'm very interested in seeing what the results of that primary. But I just want to say happy birthday to Norma Jean, Marilyn Monroe. She would be 100 years old today.
Really? Wow.
And, you know, there's been more things found out about her death. And, of course, she did have mob ties in the 1950s because basically the mob owned, I call it Hollywood. A lot of people call it Hollywood, California. But she had mob ties, and of course she was involved with John F. Kennedy. And then when he dumped her, she took up with his brother Robert.
My goodness.
But I mean, she was really involved with a lot of high-powered people. And yes, unfortunately, near the end of her life, just before she was murdered, she was drinking excessively and taking drugs. And she was starting to tell things that she knew about the mob. And she did keep a diary, and of course that is missing. But I do believe that she was murdered in a different location than where she was found in her bedroom.
Okay.
There's just a whole lot of new findings. But a very sad, tragic life, but she lived on the wild side. And there was just another side to her, too. A very glamorous, a very talented, a warm personality, I believe. And I always wanted to meet her. You know, I was fascinated by her as a child. Of course, you and I, our generation, grew up with her. But so happy birthday, Marilyn.
Well, yeah, goodbye. I always think about that Elton John song, Goodbye, Norma Jean, right? And that was a very iconic. And so, yeah, gone too soon. And we need to take a commercial break. We're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number. 1-800-568-5309. So stay with us. So we've got Henry Kriegel coming up with Americans for Prosperity. Going to be talking with us for a few minutes. And we look forward to that as well. And then at 8:30 this morning, again, as I mentioned, it's going to be Global Hotspots with Dr. Mirdad Kia and Dr. Michael Mayer. So stay with us. More coming up right after this.
A little more rain in the forecast Tuesday, but at least the chance of precipitation will drop to about 30%, mainly in the afternoon. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, a little warmer with highs in the mid-60s, but still chilly at night. Lows will get down to about 40 degrees Wednesday morning as skies clear. Wednesday could be our best day of the week with sunshine and highs close to 80 degrees, but then another system bringing clouds and a chance of rain Wednesday night into Thursday with possible thunderstorms developing. With your Town Square weather, I'm Dennis Bragg.
Hey, we are back. This is Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls this morning, and we're privileged to have with us Henry Kriegel on the phone, for Americans for Prosperity. Henry, good morning and welcome back.
Good morning, Peter. It's great to be back with you and everyone out there in Radio Land on today, last day to vote in the primaries.
So tell us what's going on. I know you have a slate of candidates that you've been looking at and supporting. What would you like to share here on Election Day?
Well, I would just like to remind people this is the end day. If you've got a mail-in ballot, please fill it out and bring it to the courthouse. Bring it to the elections office because it's got to be there tonight by today. Secondly, I just want to point out how important these elections are because they will determine essentially the balance of power in the state legislature. We got some very important races from the top of the ticket with, Kurt Hame is our endorsed candidate for U.S. Senate. He's running again. He is a tough on crime U.S. attorney appointed under Donald Trump. He served under Governor Judy March and orchestrated the largest tax cut in Montana's history. And he's been protecting us and ensuring public safety as U.S. attorney. And we'll vow just to cut spending. So he's our guy. Running against him is Seth Bodner, who is, you know him as the former president of University of Montana, a West Point grad and a war veteran, a veteran of war. And that's an honorable service. But, he's running as an independent, which is the latest trend of those who are aligned with more of a left of center ideology. We've seen that in Nebraska with Osborne running for Senate. And they do that for various reasons. One of it is because the Democrat brand, which is more aligned with those big government policies that Montana's generally oppose, is not very popular here in the state of Montana. So we're saying, hey, put your vote in for Kurt Hame and also vote on the slate of candidates that on a state level for state House and state Senate that have pledged to reduce the size of government, reduce spending, champion education, choice in education, freedom, and to institute and enact real property tax reform by really cutting spending. And we have a whole slate of candidates that we've lined up behind since March 1. And we urge you to get out and vote for our guys. And I can go down that list with you, Peter.
Please do. Yes.
More than glad to do that.
By all means, please go ahead.
Top of the ticket. Representative Zach Worth, this is probably the most contested race in the state of Montana. Representative Zach Worth in Senate District 9 versus Lou Jones. Lou Jones is a 20-year, pretty much a career politician, and has seen as House Chair, as Chair of House Appropriations and Senate Finance Chair, has been single-handedly probably the most person most responsible for the increase in the size of our budget and the size of our government. Last session, he orchestrated a 13.5% increase in state spending. So Zach Worth, he'll cut spending, institute real tax reform, real property tax reform. Steve LaPram over there in Senate District 42. Kathy Love, this is very contested. Senate District 43 in Ravalli County, just not too far from where you're broadcasting, versus Representative Dave Beatty. Kathy Love, again, is a small government, limited government, candidate, education choice proponent versus Dave Beatty, who's been one of Lou Jones's loyal lieutenants. These are not personal things. I hold nothing personal against those who we're opposing. We're just championing those candidates who we think are, will be policy champions of ours. Another very contested race, Caleb Hinkle in Senate District 34 here in Gallatin County, running against Shelley Vance, the incumbent. We support Caleb Hinkle. He is a policy champion in all the sessions he's worked. He and his brother Jed are some of the hardest working legislators and campaigners you'll ever find out there. Trevor Funseth, over switching over to Cascade County. Trevor Funseth, who is a tax attorney, grew up and raised and born and raised in the very district he's running in, HD 21, wants to reduce spending, wants to institute real judicial reform, versus Eric Peterson. Trevor Funseth is our guy. Over there in Madison County, Trevor Walter, new candidate running in HD 69 versus the incumbent, Ken Walsh, who sits on House Appropriations and also is another loyal lieutenant of Lou Jones. So we're behind Trevor Walter. Chris Shriver, HD 76. He is perhaps the single most prominent proponent of education choice in the state of Montana. One of the hardest working women people I know. She's running in HD 76 against the incumbent John Fitzpatrick, who's got a very poor scoring in our scorecard. I think it's 55% in this very hard red district. We've got Linda Harmon up there in the High Line in HD 29 versus Valerie Moore. We're for Linda. Finley Warden, a young man in HD 13 in the Polson area. This man went undercover at the Montana Federation of Public Employees and exposed their DEI lessons they were teaching to educators. Well, we like his courage. We more so we like his policy alignment with our small government regulatory reform education choice agenda that he's pledged to support strongly. So Findlay is our guy. Mary Horman over there in Carbon County, HD 55, for similar reasons against the incumbent Brad Barker. Kim Daly over there at Hamilton, not far from you guys, in HD 85 versus former Representative Michelle Binkley. Let's not return Michelle back to the House. Kim Daly is our limited government candidate there. John South, a veteran and a former Border Patrol agent in HD 28, rounding out our 13 endorsed candidates for the State House and State Senate. And guys, I can't underestimate how important this race is. These races are, because in pretty much all these endorsements, the winner for the general is being decided today. So if you haven't voted, you got till 8 p.m. to get down there and vote.
Right. Henry Kriegel, always a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for sharing it. And thank you for encouraging people to exercise their constitutional privilege and responsibility to get out and vote. It's always a pleasure talking with you, sir. Thank you so much.
You're quite welcome.
All right. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout and stay with us. Lots going on here on Talkback this morning. Of course, we'll have Global Hotspots starting at about 8:30 this morning with Mirdad and Michael. We'll be right back after this quick timeout.
Real estate. Oftentimes, the wheelchairs our veterans and first responders receive from their healthcare providers are subpar at best. Some are falling apart with a years-long waiting list for a new one. This lag causes a tremendous amount of stress for our heroes and creates a burden for their caregivers. Isolation leads to depression. We build what they need to get outdoors, hunting, fishing, or playing sports. Join the mission at wheelchairsforwarriors.org.
Welcome back, everybody. It's the Tuesday edition of Talk Back. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls this morning. It's open phones right now, and Tony is up next. Tony, thank you for holding through. Thanks for holding, Tony. What's on your mind?
Loss of sight won't blind our vision.
Yes, I'm Tony O'Donnell, former Public Service Commissioner, and I just wanted to endorse Jeff Pattison running for Public Service Commission to bring professionalism to the job, to the post. And I think he was has a very balanced mind, which is exactly what the Public Service Commission needs. And
if you don't mind me asking, which district will he be representing?
Well, it's called, I think it's District 1. It takes in because of realignment, reapportionment, right. It takes most of eastern Montana, including half of Billings.
Okay, good to know.
That I used to represent. So
okay, gotcha. Well, thank you so much for the call, sir. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Jeff's on the line right now. Jeff, good morning, sir. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, Montana. It is primary day, so I want everyone to remember to get out there and vote early and vote often.
thank you.
Yeah.
You stole my line. Go ahead.
Hey, you had 20 minutes ahead of me, Peter.
I know.
I can't help that. And I've been doing some research across the country on candidates, you know, and we have a lot of really, really funny races going. I think one of the funniest is James Tallarico down in Texas trying to become a U.S. senator down there. And one of the things is that he's a vegan. Well, he says he's not a vegan.
He's a vegan from Texas? I'm sorry. I shouldn't laugh.
Exactly. He's not strictly speaking a vegan because they have a picture of him eating a turkey leg, although it was with a napkin wrapped around the leg so he wouldn't get his hands greasy. But he says meat is violence to the climate, and so he wants to take care of the climate. So,
wow.
But in doing that research, I came across something, and you heard about it, that there are ticks that can spread a virus that can make you allergic to meat.
Really?
Yes. Red meat in particular, it makes your body react to red meat, so you can never again enjoy a steak.
Wow.
So, I'm not much for conspiracy theories, but I think this might actually be a laboratory experiment gone wrong on the vegan side. I think they are actually trying to, since they can't convince us not to eat meat, that they're trying to make us allergic to meat so we can't. call me crazy, but, you know.
There's nothing like a really
things have happened.
And forgive the term here, but it's a very juicy conspiracy theory. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Okay, and then I'll open up the phone lines by just coming up with the latest Babylon Bee headline. Health officials warn of a mysterious infertility crisis among trans women.
Okay.
So trans women are having trouble getting pregnant. Go figure.
All right. Jeff, always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Francis is on the line from Big Fork. Hey, Francis, thanks for calling in to talk back this morning. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to endorse Dan Wilson for the Supreme Court. We need somebody that's honest, and I know he is. And you can tell by his cases how he votes. He's not softy. He isn't like Amy Eddy, who lets everybody loose. And then we would need, for the rest of the guys, Aaron Flynn for House and Almy and Troy Downing. And so Aaron Flynn is my specialty. And he is going to be a good congressman because he's been in Washington before. He lived there. So he knows a lot about Washington.
Well, Aaron,
and he's been on the radio for years.
And he's a good friend. Well, this you know Nick and I have taken over since he declared for office. Because when you're declared for office, you can't be on the radio. But yeah, congratulations to Aaron. I wish the best for him.
Yes, and we are voting for him too.
All right, good deal.
Okay. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. All right, 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-53 is our number. Rapidly coming to a close with open phones, and we are going to, Nirdad Key is already on the phone with us, and Dr. Michael Mayer is ringing the doorbell as we speak. So when we come back from the break, we will have global hotspots. So if there's something, of course, Dr. Meyer and Dr. Kia always have a list of places that are quite literally on fire around the world. And we'll be talking about those places and taking your phone calls and your questions for these two very knowledgeable individuals, Dr. Michael Mayer and Dr. Mehrdad Kia. So we're looking forward to that coming up here in just a few minutes. And again, thanks so much for joining us on this edition of Talk Back. I'm Peter Christian, the fabulous Nick Christensen over there taking your phone calls. And I don't know about you, Nick. I'm ready for a little bit of sunshine.
This rain is enough for me.
I managed to slip in and mow my yard in between raindrops yesterday. So I was a happy camper.
Very good.
All right. So we're going to come right back. We'll take your phone calls, of course, for Global Hotspots. Dr. Michael Mayer sauntering into the studio. Was that a saunter? I don't know. Anyway, we're going to come right back and get started with Global Hotspots with Dr. Michael Mayer, Dr. Mehrdad Kia, when we come back from this break. And you're listening to Talk Back on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Talkback is brought to you.
A little more rain in the forecast Tuesday, but at least the chance of precipitation will drop to about 30%, mainly in the afternoon. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, a little warmer with highs in the mid-60s, but still chilly at night. Lows will get down to about 40 degrees Wednesday morning as skies clear. Wednesday could be our best day of the week with sunshine and highs close to 80 degrees, but then another system bringing clouds and a chance of rain Wednesday night into Thursday with possible thunderstorms developing. With your Town Square weather, I'm Dennis Bragg.
Welcome back to Talk Back. The number 406-721-1290, 1-800-568-5309, right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Peter Christian here, Nick Christensen taking your phone calls, and we are ready to jump right into Global Hotspots, ladies and gentlemen, with Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning. How are you doing?
And Dr. Mehrdad Kia. Good morning, Dr. Kia. How are you, sir?
Good morning, sir, and good morning to Nick. Thank you, Peter and Nick, for having us once again with you.
It's our pleasure.
And your wonderful listeners.
You bet. The floor is yours, gentlemen.
Go ahead, Mehrdad.
I was wondering, you know, we were talking with Mike on Sunday where we go, but with the events unfolding in Lebanon, I think it's fair to start there because it's not only a conflict which has basically undermined the very tenuous ceasefire between Iran and United States, but it has now caused some real issues between United States and Israel, and especially between President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu. And I think part of it is that the Islamic regime in Tehran has basically called off any negotiations with United States as long as Israel is advancing against the Iranian government's proxy in southern Lebanon, named the Hezbollah, the Party of God. And the Israelis have made major advances against this terrorist organization. And they have basically crossed into southern Lebanon in about a 10 to 15 mile zone. But that, of course, brought retaliation from Hezbollah. And it has been a real war and a very deadly war. Then Israel threatened to actually move into areas south of Beirut, the capital city itself. And the U.S. basically jumped in right away and urged Israel against striking Beirut. President Trump claimed yesterday that he had talked to both the Israelis and Hezbollah, and they had agreed to a ceasefire. But like everything else that happens in the region, you hear one thing one minute, and the next hour you hear something totally different. In fact, the Israelis have not stopped their operations, and Hezbollah has not ceased from attacking Israel. So this is the one thing, one major flare-up that does threaten the end of negotiations with Iran. And the reason is that Iran looks at it as a regional conflict, not only between itself and United States, but also between its proxies and Israel, especially Hamas and Hezbollah. So it's going to be very heated and very violent, and we don't know how it will come to an end. But as long as Hezbollah wages attacks against Israel, you should expect Israel retaliate and respond to these attacks.
Michael, please.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's striking how delicate this ceasefire in Lebanon is, partly because the Lebanese government is, and previous Lebanese governments too, have been either unable or unwilling to control Hezbollah. And one of the things that triggered this is that since May 2nd, Hezbollah has been firing rockets and drones into Israel to support Iran. They fired over 100 missiles. And Northern Israel is virtually uninhabitable. A lot of people have been moved in temporary quarters much farther south. And so.
Now, does the Iron Dome go that far up?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it covers Northern Israel, but
right.
You don't get everything, as we've learned over the time. They get 90% or a little bit over, but if something gets through, it's very dangerous, and there's this constant living with air raid sirens and having to go into shelters and so on.
Well, we are coming up. Go ahead, Beardad, please.
One thing very quickly, because you brought up the Iron Dome. That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
One of the advantages of southern Lebanon is that for Hezbollah, it's very close to Israel.
Right.
Iron Dome is for more long-distance missiles.
Gotcha.
When you have short-distance missiles, it's much more harder.
Yeah, that's the Arrow system.
We're going to come right back, and Rick is waiting to visit with you, gentlemen. It's Global Hotspots right here on Montana Talks Radio Network. We're going to come right back with more after this quick timeout with Dr. Michael Mayer, Dr. Mehrdad Kia. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Montana West. When I deployed, I didn't realize that even the air we were breathing was dangerous. Veterans like us are now eligible for new VA care and benefits based on when and where we served. Apply today. Visit va.gov/PACT.
All right, welcome back. The Tuesday edition of Talk Back. It's Global Hotspots. Yes, indeed. Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio. Dr. Mehrdad Kia on the phone. And Michael, please go ahead.
Yeah, just one other thing to add. That as we're talking about when we had to go to break, the Iron Dome is for longer range missiles. They have interceptors, the Arrow system, and David Sling for shorter and intermediate range. But still, they don't catch everything. But I think it's something to point out. A lot of people talk about Netanyahu and Netanyahu's war and so on. But especially since the phone call with Trump, Netanyahu has been criticized a lot for letting Trump dictate Israeli policy. And both Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid have said that they would take stronger action in Lebanon than Netanyahu's taken.
Mehrdad.
Yeah, no. I think in some ways both Israel and United States are now displaying their differences in some ways. For Israel, it's a question of existential survival. You have a proxy of your biggest enemy in the region, basically firing missiles into your civilian populated areas. At one point, I know 60,000 Israelis had to be evacuated. And it's so close and it's so deadly that You know, there is no government in Israel, left or right, all the center that can avoid this. On the other hand, for United States, it's a question of maintaining the momentum of negotiating with the regime in Iran, and they do not want the war in Lebanon to undermine it. This is where Israel and U.S. Sort of approach, you know, diverge basically, and they are not necessarily on the same wavelength.
Would you have callers waiting to visit with you, gentlemen? Rick has been waiting. Rick, go ahead. You're on Global Hotspots. Go ahead, please.
And gentlemen, terrorism seems to be the topic of the morning. There's a data center in France called FANPOL, and they have an association with the University of Maryland, and their data says Islamic terrorism. There has been, since 1979 to 2004, 70,000 Islamic terrorist incidents, killing 250,000 people. And we don't hear a lot about all the incidences because they're small. They're like in Afghanistan or Syria that involve doesn't involve, you know, major population centers, but it's still terrorism as we speak. I was wondering if you've ever heard of this organization, FANPOL, and its association with the University of Maryland. And my second question is, the kibbutz in Israel, I had a friend and his family lived in one. They were agricultural people. And in like 1973, the whole five family members were murdered by terrorists. And it was a tough time to get over it. Could you explain to the listeners what kibbutzism is and the culture and its society, what it gives back to the Israeli society, and that's basically what I want you to answer. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, gentlemen.
Yeah, well, just taking the second part of Rick's question, kibbutz is basically a communal agricultural settlement, and it goes back to the British Mandate days, and even before the British Mandate, before World War I, and then the British Mandate after the war. They're communal agricultural settlements, and they were one of the bases for the founding of the State of Israel, not the only one, but it's a much smaller percentage of the Israeli population today than it was in 1948, certainly, and it is a communal form of organization, and several of them were attacked on October 7th. And it's sort of interesting because these tend to be the left of Israeli society, the farthest left or far left of Israeli society. They tend to be advocates of peace and so on. It's ironic that the several of them were hit by the attacks on October 7th.
Mirdad, your thoughts?
Yeah, as Mike stated correctly and very accurately, the kibbutz are, kibbutzim actually, plural, the rural communes or rural communities created for Jewish settlers who came and wanted to become engaged in agricultural production. You live together, you work together, you share the harvest together, you learn how to defend yourself together, and it was foundational. In the cities, in urban centers, the Jewish population was organized around an all-Jewish trade union called Histadrut. That was how the working population in the cities was organized. Some of Israel's greatest leaders were actually leaders of this trade union movement. Also, in the rural areas, you had a parallel, which was the kibbutzim, or these rural communities or communes, which tells you something about the ideals of the Jewish settlers in what was British Palestine. It was basically creating a an ideal socialist society where everyone worked together and was basically an egalitarian society. But as Mike mentioned correctly, the power and influence of the kibbutz as an institution has diminished, and when you go to Israel, you realize it has become a very vibrant and very industrial and very, in many ways, a very capitalistic society with a lot of new startups and companies.
Well, when we come back from the break, we have Joe and Dave both waiting to visit with you, gentlemen. It's Global Hotspots. Our number, 406-721-1290. We're going to come right back with more of Talk Back with Mirdad and Michael right after this quick timeout. So please stay with us.
Busy Bees Cleaning.
Hey, welcome back. This is Talk Back. On this Tuesday, June 2nd, it's Global Hotspots. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, with Dr. Mirdad Kia on the phone and Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio. And we have lots of folks waiting on the line to visit with you, gentlemen. Joe, you're up next. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Alan Dershowitz made a comment a couple weeks ago that he's very concerned about the anti-Semitism in the United States. He said that he's afraid, actually. And he compared it to what happened in Nazi Germany prior to, 1938, I think you mentioned that. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on that. And what was the other? Let's just leave it at that for now.
All right, thanks for the call.
I can listen on the phone.
Gentlemen.
Joe, thanks for the comment. I think Dershowitz is right to be concerned. We've seen an upswing in anti-Semitic incidents in the United States. According to the FBI statistics, the majority of hate crimes, as they describe them, that are committed on the basis of religion are against Jews. And Jews are about 2% of the population.
Wow.
And yet account for more than half of all hate crimes based on religion. And that the incidence has been on steady increase the last several years. We've seen incidents on college campuses, and it's not just a question of demonstrating and so on. What we saw at UCLA was physically roughing up Jewish students. It happened at Harvard, too, and elsewhere, preventing them from going to classes, identifying people that they thought were Jewish either because of some article of clothing or jewelry they were wearing or just because of appearance, and making them sort of profess not to support the state of Israel before they could pass by. I mean, this is ugly stuff. We've seen the shooting at the Israeli embassy, and anti-Semitism never goes away. But I think in the two generations after World War II, the society as a whole was kind of inoculated in the sense that this can be carried too far, you know, and that. That inoculation seems to have worn off at this point. And for the last 20 years or so, you heard things, particularly in educated and polite circles that you haven't heard since the 1930s. And it is a very serious cause.
It's frightening.
Cause for concern.
Mirdad, please.
Yeah, I think the biggest, and the most recent development is this very... You know, I don't know. I don't want to add any adjectives to it, but a sense of this sort of union or unity between political Islam, and I want to emphasize political Islam, Islamic fundamentalism, political Islam, and a certain sort of trends in the left of politics. And you saw it in, as Mike mentioned, in... various university campuses, especially in 2023, after the conflict erupted between Israel and Hamas in Gaza Strip. Now, you could take it as a, sort of a Hamas attacks Israel, Israel responds, there is a war, you know, and so on and so forth. But it was taken as far more than that. It was taken as a sort of opportunity, especially for these two groups, you know, the more Islamist, you know, types on campuses with the so-called radical left to sort of not only condemn Israel, but to prevent even Jewish students to go to their classes, and slogans, you know, from river to the sea, Palestine shall be free, which is basically a way of calling for the destruction of the state of Israel, which culminates now with a democratic socialist in New York as a mayor, not in fact attending the Israel Day, you know, a celebration which has been participated by every single mayor in the past. So we are moving in the direction of just kind of making this sort of anti-Semitic ideas and sentiments public, and very proudly public, which is quite disturbing.
Yeah, in fact, you see Plattner in Maine. You know, this is a guy who wore a Totenkopf death head, Nazi death head. It's actually a something that the concentration camp guards wore for 18 years, and knowing full well what it was. And not then he got it covered over when it became an issue. But I mean that sort of thing in public discourse that's getting pretty far. And this morning, one of Bernie Sanders' spokesmen was on television defending this guy and saying that the reaction against it was all caused by AIPAC. AIPAC didn't put that tattoo on the guy.
We're going to come back, and we're like 30 seconds away from our top of the hour break, but another hour of global hotspots stands before us with Dr. Mehrdad Kia on the phone, Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio this morning. And when we come back from the break, Dave, Helena, and Harry, we appreciate the fact that you're willing to hold through the top of the hour break. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout. And again, if you want to give, there's still several phone lines open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Again, we deeply appreciate all of you listening this morning on Talkback on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We're coming back right after the top of the hour.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Hour number two of TalkBack on this Tuesday, June the 2nd. It's Global Hotspots in progress right now with Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio, University of Montana Professor Emeritus, and Dr. Mehrdad Kia, University of Montana History Professor, joining us on the phone. So, gentlemen, folks have been waiting through the break. Should we go directly to calls? Let's do that. Dave is up next. Dave, thank you so much for holding through the break, sir. What's on your mind?
Sir, I have a lot to say, but first of all, Israel will not disappear. It's the most powerful country in the Middle East. It can wipe out any and all of its neighbors just by pushing a button. And as far as Netanyahu, I am not a fan of his. And since I'm not, I guess I'm called anti-Semitic, which is far from the truth. But and I am curious how the corruption trial, what happened to that. But what concerns me right now about Lebanon is that Israel is bombing southern parts of Beirut, and reports say over 200 children have been killed, and that's not good for PR, and I think Israel needs to work harder at not killing children.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. Gentlemen, your thoughts?
Well, you know, my only comment in the, you know, to the first Dave's comment is that if you want to see those who dislike or despise Netanyahu, you should go to Israel, because I have met Israelis who truly not only oppose him, but they despise him. I mean, the fact that somebody dislikes Netanyahu or opposes Netanyahu or criticizes Netanyahu has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. That's a political sort of view, and a lot of Israelis have it. It's when that dislike for an individual turns out to be, you know, much more than that. Preventing students because of their religion or culture not to go to the class, that has nothing to do with Netanyahu. That has something to do with a form of racism and a form of bias and discrimination. As far as Lebanon is concerned, I think Lebanon is a country that has been victimized by its own sort of multi-confessional composition. It is a country of diverse groups who do not get along. And in the middle of all this, of course, comes this proxy of the Islamic regime in Iran, namely Hezbollah, who is using the conflict in the country in order to establish a base in the south and becomes a proxy of Iran and act as the instrument of Iran's Revolutionary Guards policies vis-a-vis Israel, and has brought Lebanon, which has nothing to do with Israel. Lebanon and Israel can coexist as neighbors if Hezbollah allowed it, but Hezbollah would not allow it, because it has turned southern Lebanon into a base for attacking the state of Israel.
Yeah, I think that's what Meredith said is very important, and the Lebanese government has never been either willing or strong enough to contain or control Hezbollah and their attacks on Israel, which is why Israel then turns around and winds up attacking what is Lebanese territory. And it's a real dilemma. Eventually, one would hope that the Lebanese government will either get its act together, but as Meredith said, in a multi-confessional society, and this has been a problem since at least the 1950s. The Lebanese government, which is always fragile because of all the different religious and ethnic groups. And in recent years, it's never been strong enough to control.
We're going to come right back. More of Talk Back coming up in a moment.
Hey there, this is...
A little more rain in the forecast Tuesday, but at least the chance of precipitation will drop to about 30%, mainly in the afternoon. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, a little warmer with highs in the mid-60s, but still chilly at night. Lows will get down to about 40 degrees Wednesday morning as skies clear. Wednesday could be our best day of the week with sunshine and highs close to 80 degrees, but then another system bringing clouds and a chance of rain Wednesday night into Thursday with possible thunderstorms developing. With your Town Square weather, I'm Dennis Bragg.
Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio. Dr. Meredith Kia, University of Montana history professor, on the phone. And folks have been waiting to talk with you, gentlemen. So Helena is up first. Helena, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning. I was wondering if your guest could expand a little bit on the effect that the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon has on the ceasefire in Iran between the United States and Iran. It seems like all these things are interrelated, especially the relationships with the proxies. And I wondered if they could talk a little bit about the difference between the proxy Hezbollah in Lebanon and the others that routinely get mentioned, which is, of course, Hamas in Gaza and the Houthis, I believe, the Houthis in Yemen. Thank you very much.
Wow. Interesting question. Mirdad, go ahead, please.
First, very good question. However, I wouldn't call it a ceasefire anymore. I mean, every day we have had attacks by Iranian drones against not only U.S. targets, but also against Iran's neighbors to the south, especially United Arab Emirates, more recently Kuwait, yesterday and the day before. So this is a kind of a ceasefire, which has not been much of a cease. It has been a lot of fire. That's for that. I think the United States has also taken military action against targets inside Iran, and we call it now defensive operations. I do not see it. It's a good try, but I don't see it as defensive either. United States is hitting Iran, and Iran, the Islamic regime in Iran, is hitting back. Meanwhile, we claim that there are negotiations. I don't know what they're negotiating about, to be very honest with you. Everybody knows what the issues are. The issues are enriched uranium. The Islamic regime in Iran is not willing to give up what President Trump refers to it as the nuclear dust. They're not going to give it up. The other thing is ballistic, long-range ballistic missiles. The Islamic regime in Iran is not willing to stop manufacturing them. The other thing is supporting its proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, and Houthis. The Iranian regime is not going to dismiss them and cease supporting these proxies. What is very interesting about the situation is that not much has really changed, other than the fact that we claim that we are negotiating. But in essence, both sides have maintained their positions. I think there is nervousness in the White House. The Soccer World Cup is coming in, 9 days? And we do not want to be in a war with the Islamic regime in Iran. And we want to bring the temperature down a little bit. I don't think that's going to happen either. And so, and of course, November election is coming. I think the president is nervous about this. So all of these, talks, peace talks, I think there's a lot of smoke and mirror. There isn't much of a talk, and I don't see them going anywhere at this point.
All right, we have another caller waiting. This is Harry. Harry, you're on with on Global Hotspots. Go ahead, please.
Ed, good morning, gentlemen. I agree completely with Meredith on the ceasefire. I thought the term sort of defines itself, but that's sort of changed. But also the negotiations. Both sides are saying, give us everything we want, and we'll quit fighting. And, of course, neither side is going to do that. But on that guy's tattoo, Death Head, I would give it say, you show that to 90% of the population, they wouldn't know it's a Nazi symbol. It's not a swastika. It's not the SS symbol. It's saying that he knew it. I don't think he did know, but apparently you know he better than I do. But my question...
His own aides says he knew.
No,
own aides says he knew.
Okay, but it's still, most people don't know it. My question, for in Israel, I understand that Netanyahu's their... whatever the group has sort of fallen apart, his coalition.
Coalition, yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to have new elections here soon. How do you think that's going to turn out, and do you think Netanyahu can sort of finagle his way to stay in power somehow?
It's an interesting question. It seems, according to the polling, that if elections were held today, that the most likely leader to emerge would be Naftali Bennett. Who is, as I mentioned earlier, a harder liner than Netanyahu on defense, certainly. It's conceivable, I suppose, that Yair Lapid could emerge as somebody who could form a coalition. Neither one of them is likely to have a majority. And again, this is what happened before Netanyahu and Likud established a clear majority in this last election. Israel had a series of coalition governments that were all fragile, that fell apart because one or more elements of the coalition would bolt over this issue or that issue. And, I think that it's interesting. It may be that Bennett can put together a coalition. Assuming that the elections go the way the polls are showing, if he is, he may be in a weak position because he's more likely to be a coalition leader rather than somebody with a majority of his own party.
We have about a minute, gentlemen, before we take a break. So, Mirdad, your thoughts and
things. Yeah, I think, you know, they say, don't wish for it. You might get surprised. Larry's, you know, question was excellent. I think people who really despise Netanyahu should be a bit more cautious, because what is awaiting there if Netanyahu goes, especially with Bennett? In fact, folks on the left in Israeli politics today are far more determined to attack, for example, Hezbollah in Lebanon than Netanyahu.
We're going to come right back. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. In case you just joined us, this is Global Hotspots. And our guest, Dr. Michael Mayer, here in the studio, Dr. Mirdad Kia joining us on the phone from the University of Montana. Both will be right back after this quick timeout with more phone calls from you.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. After struggling to find a new tenant for the future of a key waterfront site in downtown Missoula, city leaders finally able to close a major deal to develop the riverfront triangle into a new hotel. Just short of a year after announcing a tentative deal last summer, the city announced it had completed the $4 million sale on Friday with Whitefish-based Averill Hospitality. The two-acre site at Orange and Front Street has been vacant for years. Two major deals fell through just in the past decade alone. But Missoula Mayor Andrea Davis believes the city has finally found a buyer with local expertise and an understanding of the market.
As you know, some of the iterations and some of the concepts that we had, while amazing and very visionary, ultimately weren't financially feasible. And at the end of the day, these projects need to be financially feasible. We can achieve great things. We can achieve something that is innovative and visionary, and we can make it so it's actually possible to get it done.
This is the Montana State News Network. The sale will also spur affordable housing under a plan that will generate $7 million for the city's Affordable Housing Trust Fund over time. If you're voting by mail today, remember it's far too late to send that ballot. You'll need to swing by one of the local county election offices or a drop-off location and leave your ballot. Polls close at 8. While there are a handful of contested races for county positions, the main focus today is on the party runoffs in the state's three congressional contests. Tracy Taylor has the recap.
Montana voters head to the polls today to choose nominees for the U.S. Senate, U.S. House, and state legislature. Several high-profile races are on the ballot, including contests to replace departing members of Montana's congressional delegation. Voters will also weigh in on a number of legislative primaries that could influence the makeup of the next legislature and help shape state policy in the years ahead. Polls close at 8 p.m., and election officials expect results to begin coming in shortly after voting ends. Tracy Taylor, Montana State News Network.
As a parent, you said you'd never give up the convertible.
Look, the van even has its own vacuum.
You said you'd never stop listening to your music.
Do your happy dance, do your happy dance, yeah. That's right.
You said you'd never schedule your life around a stuffed animal.
Nobody panic. Bun Bun is still at daycare.
You said you'd never give in to demands.
Two kids meals and a chocolate shake,
and never put them in harm's way.
I'll be right back, little man. Just gonna pop in the store for diapers.
But never happens. And no amount of time is okay to leave your child in a car by themselves.
Long line today.
Temperatures as low as 60 degrees can be deadly for children left behind. So always bring them with you every time you park the car. Stop. Look. Lock. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Talk Back, and of course, it's Global Hotspots in progress right now. Another, a little more than a half an hour left of phone calls from you folks for our special guest, Dr. Mirdad Kia, joining us on the phone, University of Montana History Professor, Dr. Michael Mayer, University of Montana Professor Emeritus, and we have folks waiting on the phone, and Frank from Billings. Frank, thank you so much for holding, sir. What's on your mind?
Me and a bunch of my friends, people I talk to, are kind of getting a little tired frustrated with these endless negotiations. And my question is, do you think Trump knows that if he ever does sign a deal with Iran, that it's going to be worthless as soon as he leaves office? And if so, do you think he has an ulterior motive to dragging out these negotiations? Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Interesting question.
It's hard to know what Trump's motivations
or what
are.
Or what he's thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Although, I mean, in one sense, he tells you all the time. And in another sense, he keeps things pretty close to the vest. I think he's acutely aware of the fact that if he winds up with something along the lines of maybe an improved JCPOA, that could be easily reversed by the next administration if the next administration is from the other party. And I think he's trying to come up with something that will stick. Obviously, it's very difficult. If it were simple, somebody would have done it years ago. And I'm quite frankly still amazed at the pounding that the regime in Iran has been willing to take in order to hold on to its nuclear ambitions, to hold on to its what's left of its missile program. Meredith, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Frank's points are very well taken. It's an excellent point. First and foremost, I am also, to be very frank and open, I'm very, very tired of this nonsense that we are negotiating. What are you negotiating about, you know, really? And, you know, this is the same president who was criticizing President Obama for having signed a bad deal. Well, this is also a very poor approach to, you know, dealing with a regime which is responsible for wreaking havoc in the region. I would say this, if I may, just three very, very fast points. The paper you will sign an agreement with Iran is worth minus zero. That is, it's not worth anything because they're not going to abide by it. I can guarantee that. Second, and this is very important, if you release any funds, you know, in order to get this deal, it's going to look worse than what the Obama and Biden administrations did. The approach was to bribe them, to silence and neutralize them by releasing their frozen funds or releasing other funds. I think we are negotiating that through Qatar, and that's going to look like a very bad case of cheating because he was attacking Obama until recently that they release all these billions of dollars. What are we doing now? We are actually telling Qatar to release a little bit of money in the background in order for Iranians to maybe come to negotiation table. Third, who are you negotiating with? You are telling the American people that the leadership in Iran has changed. The leadership in Iran has not changed. That is a lie. That is a lie. Khamenei died. A lot of people around him died, but the people we are negotiating with are the worst elements within the regime who have survived U.S. strikes. And this kind of nonsense that we actually pretend like we have accomplished something big, the biggest accomplishment was on the first day when Khamenei was eliminated. That was the biggest accomplishment. After that, and Mike is made a very good point, you know, they have been resilient in defending. You know why? Because we have been hitting buildings. The key to the issue of changing the regime is actually removing the leadership of IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, the biggest terrorist organization in the world. If you want to change Iran, you have to change the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, which runs that country and its leadership.
Who has the will to do that, Mirdad, in a minute and a half?
Well, this is the problem. I think we have all the muscle, but there is no political will to do that. And this is the thing. I mean, there were 8.5 million people, Peter, on the streets of Tehran on January 8th and 9th, right? And that regime killed 45,000 Iranian demonstrators. And what was the President of the United States telling those people on the streets of Tehran? Do not worry. Stay on the streets because help is on the way. Mm. Where is that help? I'm sorry to ask. You know, where did that help come from? Any technology, any arms, any funding, any freezing of Iran's asset, any closing down of Iran's embassies across the world? Instead, we are negotiating with them. That's actually sending the wrong signal to the wrong people.
And with that, we are a very powerful statement. We're going to take a break. Phone lines are open. We have Catherine and Jeff both waiting to visit with you, gentlemen. You're listening to Global Hotspots with Dr. Mehrdad Kia, University of Montana History Professor, and Dr. Michael Mayer, U of M Professor Emeritus, here in the studio with us this morning. Another half hour stretches before us for Global Hotspots. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Out here, we have so much in common. We all share a love of wildlife. But now, the animals we love and the lands we treasure are threatened. Up to 1 million species face extinction unless we unite. We are their last line of defense. We are defenders of wildlife. Join us as we band together to protect our wildlife and wild places. Because in our love for what we share, we are closer than you think. Be a wildlife defender. Learn more at defenders.org.
Hey, this is the Tuesday edition of Talk Back, and again, it's Global Hotspots with Dr. Mehrdad Kia on the phone. Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio this morning. And Mehrdad, you had some clarifications you wanted to make, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's actually building on what we discussed in response to Frank's excellent question and comment. You know what it is? It's that they provided a couple models, and they put it in front of the president. One model was the least headache model, which, of course, he has a tendency to like that, was the Venezuela model. We go in. You know, we basically take Maduro and his wife out, and we basically put somebody new, and that person will collaborate with us, and we have changed it. Great. It worked in Venezuela. It doesn't work elsewhere. It doesn't work in Iran. Iran is not Venezuela. First of all, you cannot go in, you know, with boots on the ground. You know, just the capital city, Tehran. It's about 12 million people. It doesn't even have a map. You know, I was born and raised there, and I often got lost there myself. You know, you have to be really genius to know Tehran itself. And that's one city, 12 million. Population of 90-some million people. So it's a complex society. But what we have to focus on is the real target. The real target is this Revolutionary Guards. And Revolutionary Guards, people say, oh, it's their armed forces. It isn't. It is not a trained armed forces. You know, the army, I should say. It is not a North Korean army or a Russian army or a Chinese army. It was actually created by recruiting criminals, you know, radicals who were willing to come and kill and get killed and make some money for their families and so on and so forth. It's a mercenary army. It's a paramilitary organization. It's actually semi-terrorist, semi-paramilitary, and it was created in order to keep the regime intact. The reason they do not fall that easily is they don't have anywhere else to go. They don't have any other job to do. Their survival, the survival of their families, there are about 450,000, depends on the survival of this regime. And all of their hits, I have to tell you, I mean, by all international standards, are criminals. I give you one example, because people always ask about concrete example. Please look at Ahmad, A-H-M-A-D, Wahidi. This guy is amazing, you know, character. You know, he is wanted for terrorism across the world. And you know why? Because he was responsible for bombing a Jewish community center in Argentina, killing a large number of children, you know, in the process. This is the kind of people we are dealing with. They are professional terrorists, and that's why they have created Hezbollah. That's why they have created, you know, the Houthis and so on. They have replicated themselves. You know, the way Revolutionary Guards behaves is exactly how Hezbollah behaves, and so on and so forth. So we know what the targets are, but we keep on playing around and basically say there is a way out through negotiations. I know the president believes he's the best negotiator, but this is a 2,500-year culture and society. It does not fit the kind of models that he's thinking about. We have to think more creatively.
Yeah, just one quick thing to add, because it's along the lines of what Meridad was saying. If you do unfreeze assets or provide any other form of financial support or aid, that's going to go, as it has in the past, to reconstruct their nuclear program, to build missiles, and to arm their proxies.
All right, with that, we are up against a break. When we come back, Catherine and Jeff are both waiting to visit with you gentlemen. In case you just joined us, this is Global Hotspots, and we do this a couple times, at least once a month, with Dr. Meridad Kea and Dr. Michael Mayer from the University of Montana, and sharing their expertise with us, and you also sharing your thoughts and your questions. That's what it's all about. And we still have several phone lines open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we have lots more, actually about 20 more minutes left in our time together. So if you have a thought or a comment, we hope you'll give us a call, and we'll get you on the air, and you can talk with Dr. Mayer and Dr. Kea. So our number again, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. You're listening to Talk Back on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Back right after this. Support for Talk.
When a heart stops, the clock starts. You are the first responder until help arrives. In that moment, 4 minutes equals brain damage. 6 minutes equals too late in an emergency. The first responder is you. We need you. Will you be ready? Learn CPR. Visit heart.org/nation. That's heart.org/nation.
If your community is affected by wildfires, contractors may approach you with incredible promises to help you recover. However, they may be dishonest individuals hoping to take advantage of your situation. Don't be a victim. If you suspect fraud, contact NICB at reportinsurancefraud.org. A public service message from the National Insurance Crime Bureau.
Hey, we are back. This is the Tuesday, June 2nd edition of Talk Back. In case you just joined us, it's Global Hotspots with Dr. Meridad Kea on the phone with us, University of Montana Professor of History, and Dr. Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio, University of Montana Professor Emeritus. So let us continue with our conversation. Gentlemen, please, we have lots of folks waiting. Catherine, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead.
Good morning. This is according to the National Council of Resistance of Iran. Yesterday, two protesters were executed. That was yesterday morning. Mirdad Mohammadinia and Ashkan Maleki, they were leaders of the recent January uprising. And, of course, Iran has been routinely, the regime has been routinely executing people that they consider to be members of any sort of opposition. So is there any movement to unify an opposition coalition between various groups that are opposed to the regime, or is that at this time not viable, and are there too many ideological, strategic, and regional disagreements between the opposition groups?
Good questions. Thank you.
Go ahead, Meredith.
Yeah, so I think we should know the rate, the exact rate, according to all international organizations, including Amnesty International, is one execution every 4 hours in Iran. They have broken the record of China and others who are very high up in that execution sort of model. And they are going after everyone, but especially, as you mentioned, the leaders of the January uprising. I just want to, you know, remind you that the source, your source, National Council Resistance, it sounds really, you know, kind of impressive. But these are this is the organization which represents the Mujahideen. Mujahideen are a leftist Islamist organization which actually assassinated a number of American officials and those who worked in Iran in 1970s. And then, of course, they supported Khomeini. And when Khomeini kicked them out, they went and supported Saddam Hussein and received arms and money from Saddam to come back and get rid of Khomeini. This is not the most reliable source. And that is why I want to use it as a segue to say why there is no unity. The democratic forces in Iran, which are calling for free and democratic elections, separation of religion from politics, and calling for the people of Iran to decide what kind of government they want, whether it's a constitutional republic or a constitutional monarchy, it has to be constitutional, refuse to ally themselves with this kind of organization. Why? Because this organization has had a hand-picked president for the last 35 years, and they call themselves the opposition to the regime, which is actually a joke. So no, there will not be a unified opposition. I think much of the opposition is against the regime, but they are also against these kinds of groups which claim to be opponents of the regime, but in fact are very undemocratic in their essence.
All right, let's get Jeff on the line. Jeff, good morning. Thank you for holding. You're on. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning again. Two questions, really. Michael, I appreciated what you said about anti-Semitism and calling out the fact that Graham Plattner says on his own website, basically demonstrates that he's an anti-Semite. But one of the problems, I think, is that as I was looking at it after you talked, we are as far from World War II right now, roughly as far from World War II in terms of years, as World War II was from the Civil War.
Yeah.
You know, roughly 80 years. And so people growing up in the 1940s, you know, learned about the Civil War, but it didn't have the impact of the people who had lived through it in the several generations afterwards. And I think that's what's happening here, too, that we of a certain generation, of a certain age, have memories of people who came back and served. You know, I've talked much about my neighbor, 100 years old now, who was on the USS Detroit going into Tokyo Bay. And, you know, those memories are getting lost, and pretty soon it's just going to be another aspect of history. Yeah, there were a lot of Jews killed in Germany, and that was a long time ago. So I think that, unfortunately, this generation is going to have to learn that lesson themselves in a very difficult way. And I fear for them in that regard. Your dad, your passion about the way the people of Iran are still waiting for hope after all this time. My question for you is, it seems like a lot of folks in punditry and those of us out in the general public get a sense that there's one monolith of people to negotiate with in Iran. And I'm wondering if, you know, there were several power centers before the war started, and the religious leaders were notionally in charge, and they were the ones who were out front. And the IRGC was in the background, supposedly subordinate to them. Was that really the case? And do you think that the power centers have shifted now so that the current administration could be negotiating with somebody who doesn't, strictly speaking, represent the IRGC?
Well, let's hang on to that, because we're just seconds away from a commercial break here, and I want to give Mirdad, it's a very worthy question, and he deserves the time to answer it fully. So we're going to come right back, and again, we have several other phone lines open. Skip and Marilyn are still waiting to visit with you gentlemen. This is Global Hotspots. Dr. Mirdad Kia joining us on the phone, University of Montana history professor, and Dr. Michael Mayer, University of Montana professor emeritus, right here in the studio. We're taking your phone calls for another 10 minutes or so, and we still have several phone lines open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And if you're enjoying Global Hotspots as I do, I hope you'll stay with us all the way to the top of the hour. Again, you're listening to Talk Back right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. Stay with us. Hey, welcome back to Talk Back, Global Hotspots, the final segment here. And we have, of course, on the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia, and here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer. So let's continue. I believe we have Skip on the line. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nick. Sorry.
Questions before the break.
Oh, yeah. We have questions. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, those were very good points raised by Jeff. It's one issue is that, I have an admiration for leaders who go through tough times, stand with their own people, and fight back, and still stand on principles. Here, I'm specifically referring to Volodymyr Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. I really admire this man and this leader. With all the things he has gone through and is still going through, he is now beating back the Russians. Ukraine is going to win this war, regardless of what the Russians would say. And at the same time, you know what he did last week? He actually invited the true democratic opposition of Iran to his country. And the democratic opposition of Iran went there. They gave fantastic talks. Why? Because they know who the enemy is. The enemy is Putin, who is being armed by the Islamic regime and receiving armed drones. That's one. I want to be quick so we can get more calls. The second issue is what kind of thing is inside. As long as Khamenei, the supreme leader, was alive, he acted as a glue which brought the various factions, the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guards, and others, under one umbrella. Since he was killed, that umbrella has been shattered, and they have been fragmented. And now the opportunity has risen for the leadership of IRGC to assume more power, and in fact, I think in the long run, total power from other factions. This is a military junta and a military dictatorship without any religious or so-called spiritual supervision from above.
All right, Skip has been waiting on the line. Skip, good morning. You're on Global Hotspots. Go ahead, please, sir.
Thank you, Peter. And thank you, Dr. Mirdad and Dr. Mears, for coming on. And Dr. Mirdad, you just covered my primary part of my question, which was about Zelensky and his resilience and how he's handled this. And so thanks for going over that. I just wanted to know, do we have our backs covered about some of the other things going on? I saw some programming this weekend where Russia is, in fact, having a monstrous buildup of military equipment. And then in Germany, all of a sudden, they're revitalizing their military ability with people and armament, and so they can be prepared for any move that Russia makes. I'm concerned about what are the BRIC nations doing quietly that could be a trap for us.
All right.
In other words, is somebody watching our back? And then what are we doing about our strategic oil reserves, which are down to about 40%?
All right.
And I'd like to know if you have any of those answers, and thank you very much.
Gentlemen, please, we have just a couple of minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, just real quickly. I mean, I think the point about the Russian buildup is an interesting one, because as Mehrdad said, in recent weeks, the Ukraine has really managed to turn the tide of this war, which had been a war of position, basically almost World War I style trench warfare. And now it's become more a war of maneuver, and Ukraine has gained back some territory. Doesn't mean they're going to win tomorrow or anything, but it's a fascinating development.
Got about 2 minutes left in our time together, and I know you wanted to talk about the next book.
Right, the next book for the book club, which will be the third Monday of the month, is Jan Dutkiewicz, Dutkiewicz. That's Dutkiewicz, and Gabriel Rosenberg, Rosenberg. The title of the book is Feed the People, Why Industrial Food is Good and How to Make it Better.
Right.
And so both of these guys are experts in the field. It'll be interesting to discuss what they have to say. It's published by Basic Books and available online, and I imagine in some bookstores.
Dr. Mehr, thanks for being with us. Mehrdad, as always, a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
The pleasure is all ours. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much. And again, thank you all for calling this morning here on Global Hotspots. And Mr. Nick, as we look forward to what's coming up on Wednesday. Please go ahead.
We'll have our resident CPA, Walt Caro. He's here to answer your tax questions. The first 30 minutes or so of the show, we won't be taking calls because he'll be doing his tax school. So he'll give us an update on that. And then from 8:30 to 10, he'll be ready to take your calls.
All right, there you go. And again, a big thank you to everybody who called in this morning, but especially everyone who listened today. This is a great Global Hotspot show, and we appreciate our commentators, of course, Dr. Michael Mehr here in the studio, and Dr. Mehrdad Kia, University of Montana Professor of History. And we look forward to our next time that we do this. We appreciate it. And we hope that you will stay with us and join us tomorrow right here on TalkBack. Again, thank you all for calling and being a part of the show. We appreciate every single one of you. And again, in case you're just joining us, 406-721-1290 is our number for the next show, or 1-800-568-5309. Thanks for joining us here on TalkBack on the Montana Talks Radio Network. For Nick Christensen, I'm Peter Christian. Have yourself a great day.